Hello, everybody.
Hey.
I'm Steven.
I'm Alan.
And you're listening to...
Live, Laugh,
Joe. My ears.
Yeehaw, buddy.
All right.
Welcome to episode 4 of Live, Laugh, Joan.
Here we are.
Right off the bat, we're going on tour. And boy, I would just be just chuffed if I saw you there at a show. We're going to...
Is that a word?
Yeah, sure. We're going to only the biggest cities in America.
Yeah.
But also some not of the biggest cities like Little Rock, Arkansas. Don't know if you've heard of it.
What it doesn't have in size, it makes up for in heart.
You got that right.
Yeah.
We're going to places, you know, like New York, Nashville.
Never heard of it.
We're also going to some other places that I'm not thinking of on the top of my head.
Los Angeles, Phoenix. But,
yeah, those are all good ones too. And Atlanta. Wherever you live, we're probably coming close enough.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
run over to songsbyjoan.com/tour and get your tickets now. We seriously would like love to see you there. We love touring. We love playing shows and we love meeting you and just like really, really enjoy kind of getting the face-to-face part of it and playing shows. We love doing that too.
We do.
The other thing I was going to say was... that we release these podcasts to Jonely fans kind of exclusively for the first week. So if you're interested in that, go subscribe. Any tier gets to see this podcast.
$5, $10, $20.
And you get different things with each tier. And yeah, it's very fun. We have a Zoom hang with the top tier monthly. Yep. And doesn't matter if we're on tour or if we're at home or whatever we make time to hang with you and we love it. It's a really sweet part of our month.
Yep.
And we get excited every time. And there's an airplane going by or something. But anyway, okay, well, great. I think that's kind of all the announcements we had. We're also releasing an album. That's coming out April 19th, and it's our debut album, and I'm
it's
called Super Glue. Very excited for you to hear it.
Yeah.
But yeah, all that out of the way.
Let's get to the hard-hitting issues.
Yeah, let's go for it. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. I'm acting like I haven't seen you all day.
Yeah, I know. We've been together since this morning. Ellie had a doctor's appointment this morning.
Oh, yeah?
She got shots. It was not fun. If you don't have kids, when kids get shots, it's the absolute worst.
Yeah, because they don't know what's going on.
No.
That's the worst.
Every time after she had the first one, another person would walk in, a different person with a mask, she would just lose it. Each time, just, poor girl.
Everyone's the bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. So that was not enjoyable. But other than that, day's been pretty chill.
Nice.
Yeah. How about you? Everything good?
Everything's good. Had a really, really chill weekend and just got to, it felt like kind of the first weekend in a while where I've just been able to like not think about anything, which was nice.
It's good.
It's crazy. Like we are done writing the album and it's kind of in that mode where it feels like you're in between, you know, writing it and releasing it, but there's like literally every day there's something new that we need to do. And, like we had even talked about, like it feels like super overwhelming sometimes, just like the list of things that needs to be done. And we also do everything ourselves and,
which is both awesome most of the time. And sometimes it's like, hey, we maybe shouldn't do that,
yeah.
But yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's like a really good thing, but it doesn't like, it still gets so it can just feel like so much. So this weekend was really nice because it was kind of the first weekend in probably a month where I didn't have anything on the agenda, didn't have, you know, kind of forced myself to chill, which was really cool. So, yeah.
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I did.
Who are you going for?
I didn't have a favorite.
You're such a big football guy. I'm surprised.
Well, I'll admit that we were watching the Super Bowl, and then we're watching The Last of Us right now too.
Mm.
And we kind of both realized we're not paying attention that much to the Super Bowl. So once halftime hit, we kind of just watched The Last of Us. So, but I don't know. It's interesting. I like love football and love sports in general and played them all growing up. And it was like so much of my life growing up. But for some reason, I just can't. It's so hard for me to like sit down and watch football for 4 hours.
Yeah. So it's hard for me to watch anything for 4 hours, but
right.
I'm mostly Lola more than me, but big on football.
Mm-hmm.
NFL, go Cowboys. They're the worst, but I love them so much. I'm definitely the more sports watcher, I guess. Do you like, so if you don't know, Steven plays golf, but do you like watching golf?
Not really.
Yeah.
I do, like, my dad loves watching golf, so anytime I'm like with him, it's usually on and I'll watch with him, but it's very much like, you know, it's more of a do it with my dad kind of thing more than like, I never just turn on golf and watch it. Yeah. I don't turn on any sports to do that.
Yeah.
But it's weird. 'Cause like, I really respect sports in a big way. And like, obviously like they're crazy athletic and like the top of the, I don't know, physicality, you know, of like humans. So I don't know. It's just like, but for some reason, I don't have that kind of itch to like watch everything.
Yeah. The other day you were telling me you really enjoy watching parkour videos online.
Is that right?
Interesting. Yeah. Or something like that.
You sure you were talking to me?
Oh, maybe it was poker, not parkour, poker, World Series, something like that. Anyway.
That is a sport that I could watch all day, you know, just watching flushes just and
straight.
Straights.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. One of them. Who cares? Well, I watched Super Bowl. I loved it. Don't care about either of those teams. Lola is a big Chiefs fan, but Rihanna smashed it, in my opinion. I was telling her, it's crazy to me. I read that the Super Bowl halftime artists don't get paid.
Oh, really?
Which it was like a legit, I don't remember if it was like, it was some legit credible news source. It wasn't just like a Facebook post or something. But, and the reasoning I read behind it was that they said that it's the largest watched event like ever, always.
So it's just great promo.
Exactly. Which, I mean, obviously she is massive anyway, but I think they were showing other stats from previous years, like when the Dr. Dre like halftime show, his streams went up like 100-fold or something, 100% or something the next whatever stretch of time.
Huh.
And there was someone else's, I don't remember who it was, but it went up like 1,000% like stream count. And so,
wow.
I mean, if you can do the math on that with what they're already making, you know, and you see your numbers go up. Huh. I guess that's worth the pay alone, or the no pay alone, but that can't be cheap though. That production.
Yeah, I wonder if they are paying for production costs, or if that's helped by NFL or anything too.
I don't know.
Maybe if they're not being paid at all.
Yeah,
that's wild.
Yeah, I was very surprised to see that. But I mean, those artists are such upper echelon.
Yeah.
At least in my mind, pay. So it's like
right. If we got asked to play the Super Bowl, we would be able to afford the production.
You guys cool if we do acoustic?
Yeah. Change it up.
Also, Chris Stapleton did the, I don't know if you saw that, but he did the intro. Why am I blanking on what that's called?
The
Star Spangled Banner.
The American Standard song.
What is,
National anthem.
You putting your hand over your heart does nothing for me. He didn't sing the Pledge of Allegiance.
He sang the National anthem.
The National anthem. Dude, my brain was like, what is that called? Anyway, I am not unpatriotic.
He sang the America Sing song. Yeah,
I'm not unpatriotic, but I just don't always get moved in those moments as most people maybe, or some people do. But I got a little, I was like, his voice is like insane. And I was just watching him, and I was like, dang, this is a moment.
I was and I really liked, I mean, it's so simple, but the guitar with him, too, like, for some reason made it,
it was nice. A special one. Yeah. It was one of my favorite of that I've heard, of the Pledge of Allegiance song, sing song.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the American, American song. What'd you say it was?
Freebird? Is that what it is?
I'm glad he played the short version of it, though.
Anywho.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I don't really know, I mean, how we transition into anything, but we don't really have anything super planned, but...
Yeah.
There was, like, sort of things that we came into with. That we don't really know what each other are wanting to talk about. But I was going to ask, I was thinking over this weekend, like, we have, like, album stuff moving and like, I was just thinking through, like, releasing an album in the industry, like, how it is now. And I was curious what your kind of pros and cons were with industry stuff, like if you had like something you think is really cool about the industry now, or if something you wish you could change about the music industry.
Yeah.
Or if you had any thoughts on that.
Okay. Hit me. Oh, I'm ready for this.
Okay.
Well, I mean, as far as like album cycle goes, I think we talked about it a little bit in our Dayglow interview with Sloan, but because we were discussing it being our debut and what that feels like, because it's just been such a different process for us prior to this. The idea of the album cycle still kind of baffles me. It's such like a, it seems like such an old model. But even, and I'm not the music history guy by any stretch of the imagination, but it would just seem to me that when you think back on like old school, like Elvis era, 50s, 60s, that era, when they were literally pressing singles to one side of a record or whatever. Yeah. And then that was going to radio and it would get played, and you might tour in like a variety kind of show, like Johnny Cash. Like there'd be like five artists in one night and you just go up there and play like two or three songs, I think. Mm-hmm. And one of them was Walk the Line or whatever. Yeah. Whatever it was. And so to think of that model now, or that model then compared to now, where it's like, it seems, I could be wrong, but it seems as though a lot of looks that you might get from publications, editorial, whatever it may be, hinge somewhat, unless you're having a moment elsewhere, TikTok, some viral thing, the album really does seem to be like the thing you need in place for someone to give you that second look or that bigger look, maybe.
Yeah.
Just like artists that I can think of that are like, not even necessarily our size or our peers or whatever, we don't necessarily know them, but like, unless they had a moment on a social network of some sort, most of them started getting looks with an album. I think even, and Sloan may have said this on the interview, I can't remember, but like Fuzzy Brain, I think he had Can I Call You Tonight, got really big. And I don't know if that, I can't remember if he said that came before the album, like that was a single for the album, and then the album did really well with the success of that, or it's kind of synergy kind of thing. But even his seemed to be around like an album cycle. And just in my head, we just haven't thought through that, or thought with that perspective in mind. And so that's one thing that's been really surprising for me, of like, just having to reframe my brain into like, we've got a whole 10 song project and then all of the content.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. Maybe that's the ticket, is like, regardless of what happens with the album, success, whatever level we deem that to be, there's just so much around it that's a lot different than what we're used to, like a single. Like, we release a single or an EP, we do a few song videos, or maybe every song, but it's still only like five or six, and then you're still like, we're kind of launching things one at a time. This is like, yeah, we're doing that, but then there's a whole nother like six songs on it that haven't gotten any attention yet until it drops.
Yeah.
Anyway, having to like reframe my brain on top of the mind freak of like being done in September, and you know, we're still in the album cycle.
Yeah.
It's just very wild to me.
Yeah.
And it overwhelms my brain. But
do you think that's should change? Or is it just something?
I think I'm more baffled by it because I'm baffled by it because of how the attention economy is different now, and everyone is vying for like a second of your time. And I even noticed myself, I love listening to albums all the way through. I love listening to long form podcasts. Like I can sit and just do one thing. But it's still such a single driven, like you release the album, and unless you're The Weeknd or someone really big, you're only going to get one single that of your album put on playlist that week, more than likely, like New Music Friday or whatever it is. So you do all that work for like still one song to kind of be the focus, you know, track, which is fine. It's just kind of crazy to me, the short attention span we all have now, that we're still focused on like a 10 song collection. Cause that's could be 30 minutes. Like, I don't think ours is like 35 or something, the whole album or something like that.
Yeah.
Or it could be, you know, 5 minute songs and that's an hour, you know, whatever of an album. And I don't know. I'm not sure that I have like an opinion on it other than it's just kind of confusing to me. And I'm curious in the future if that will change. Like, cause singles are not necessarily king now, but a song can pop on TikTok, a 30 second clip of a song can pop on TikTok and that launch an artist.
Yeah.
Does the album for that artist matter as much? I don't know. Maybe it does.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. I don't, yeah, it is. It's weird. Cause it's like, there's like a dichotomy sort of people. People on one hand have such a short attention span now, but also they'll watch 8 hours of a show on Netflix just straight through, or they'll, or like long form podcasts are bigger than they've ever been, or like, I don't know. It's just interesting how people are sort of like, they don't care for some things to be long, and then, but they're also willing to sit and like listen to things for a long time, like over an hour and whatever. I guess I consider that long now, but yeah, I think that too. And I wonder if it's one of those things where there also weren't, a ton of like metrics driving it.
Right.
If that's the right thinking on it. Like,
well, like did TikTok start in whatever it was originally, what were the clips? Like how long could you?
Oh, like 15 seconds or something. Yeah.
So that was the format it began with, I'm assuming, or that's when it was popularized. It's like, did they start it with that in mind of like, we're doing this because we think people will only want that much duration of a video?
Yeah.
Or was it not like some conspiracy agenda, just like in their mind, they were just like, no, short form is the future. Let's drive that forward. And so they're just like, and then they exploded, like
because
now I think it's longer, right? You can do up
to like 3 minutes now or something,
which is it's interesting that they like Twitter. I mean, it's they have the same thing with character count, but
yeah, I don't know, but I think what's cool about it though too is it's cool to me, I guess, at the end of the day with that maybe singles still drive it, or maybe singles are the biggest introduction to what can be new fans or whatever. But that they're still obviously big enough of an interest where album songs matter. And so like even thinking about like Harry's album, I don't think, I mean, he's like one of the biggest artists obviously, but like there's not a lot of focus on like Matilda like that song. But to some people, that's the best song he's ever written and will always be. And it's like this like special kind of thing in different people's minds, where it doesn't matter what the singles do or what the, you know, maybe even what the album as a whole does, but it gives more opportunity for more people to have like special things mm-hmm. or relationships, I guess, with that artist, which is really cool to me. Like it's cool that maybe even though the norm is to kind of feed short form to people are also kind of wanting something that's not being necessarily fed to them, or like something that they can sink their teeth into or something. Yeah. I don't know. But that excites me kind of in the industry now. Is like, it feels like there's less of a, you can be a one hit wonder kind of thing, because there's so much accessibility and like you can find people easier if you're releasing music, but also it's like more daunting because there's, you know, it's like there's also that many more artists now. But on the same thought, it's like there's a lot of people out there that we maybe have never seen, like be a listener of Joan, where they could listen to Backseat Driving and that's like, that's the song that makes them a Joan fan. And it's like, that song's different than any song we've ever made. So it's like, I don't know. It's just interesting how, maybe it doesn't get as many looks in general, but it also like creates an opportunity for different people to find us in different ways.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I was thinking more like this weekend, I was just kind of like the thought just on, I guess, Spotify, maybe in general, just being able to see the numbers on specific songs. Mm-hmm. Part of me likes that because I have that kind of brain where I'm like, I like to see what this song is doing today, like how many streams it's gotten or what playlist it's gotten and how many streams it's gotten from that specific playlist and like the kind of the...
Yeah, like data behind it.
Yeah. But at the same time, I'm like, would the industry be better if like you couldn't see those numbers, at least artists, like if we could just kind of focus on not necessarily being able to see what songs are making, you know, getting the most streams or views or whatever. Like if we could kind of blind ourselves from that and like really just focus on creating what we want to create and maybe not like what we see is getting the most streams. I don't know. It's interesting.
This is like a common theme for me, and especially combos with Lola. Like I definitely get in comparison mode so easy.
Sure.
And I think we all do. I have a bit worse case of it than maybe you do, or maybe a lot of my friends do in the industry. But, so for me, it's like, it's a blessing and a curse. I like seeing the data. So like we can make educated decisions on like a set list.
Sure.
You know, we know this does really well. So good, hits really well in streaming for us. So that's a no brainer live or whatever. And if we have fun with that one and there's a good reaction or whatever, but where I think it gets me in the negative headspace is like, if, you know, it has a jolt out the gate when we release it and then it kind of settles and it settles to a number that maybe a previous single took longer to settle. I'm like, well, did they not like that song as much? Yeah. Like, did it not get placed on as many playlists? And then it's just a quick spiral for me. So I still have Spotify for Artists and Apple for Artists on my phone, but I rarely look at it.
Yeah.
I sometimes will go on, if I see like something jump, or like we're talking in our chat with Colin about whatever, and someone's like, hey, we hit X amount. I'm like, oh, cool, I'll hop in there real quick. Mm-hmm. But I'm usually met with some negative feeling pretty quickly. Sure. And so I'm like, I don't even need it. For me, it's less important. But yeah, I mean, for those listening, Steven's really good with like, I'm talking like you're not in front of me.
I'll close my eyes. You're,
you're really good, I think, with like measured... And this is probably your marketing background brain, maybe somewhat, or maybe just your general temperament. But I feel like you're pretty good at like looking at things objectively and going like, okay, there's pros and cons in this number. Here are the pros, here are the cons, here's how we take it and make it better or use it, excuse me, to our advantage. Whereas my brain's like not thinking like that. I'm just like, I don't like what I see, and therefore I just like don't even want to look at it. Yeah. So, but that's why we work well together.
Yeah,
you can think about that stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, I can go to sleep crying. I think for me, it's generally more just like exciting because you can see. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely both sides to it, but like Drive All Night is a great example because it's we released that song in like 2019, so that's
4 years.
Four years ago.
Carry the one.
No, that's not right. 3 years ago. Well, I guess it would be. Anyway,
yeah,
doesn't matter. And originally, that song did like fine, whatever you want to call fine, but like now, it's like for some reason over the last year, been like
one of our top.
Yeah, it's like crushing it, uh-huh. And it's like it's cool. That part of it's cool to me to see like this is happening, and for some reason more people are listening to this song that is 3 or 4 years old or whatever.
Yeah.
But then the other part of it's like, well, you know, why aren't newer songs happening like that?
Right,
or like,
right.
Why, like, what are we doing differently? Like, do we need to change? Like that thought can get in your mind really quick. Where I don't want that at all. Like I want us to be able to go into the studio and to like just make what we want.
Yeah.
Because that's where the best stuff's made anyway. And it's like, so yeah, there's kind of a, I don't know, back and forth with it in my head where it's like, I want to like celebrate that song, even though it's that old, but you know, even though it's several years old, it's like for some reason doing well right now.
Right.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that happens for our music coming out this year. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's cool to think like that could happen right off the jump on a release, or it could happen 5, 10 years from now too. It kind of helps make songs timeless in a way too, which is exciting, but also scary too.
Yeah,
'cause it's like,
no doubt,
you know, I don't know. I try to keep like a good perspective on it, but it's tough too.
Yeah.
Strictly because of like that there's a number under the song. It's just so weird.
It's like it's a performance metric immediately for you or for anyone. One, it is interesting too, like when you think about other songs, I think of that song, Safe and Sound by Capital Cities.
Oh,
you know that song? That was everywhere for like, it felt like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Every commercial, every everything. Same with like that American Author song, Best Day of My Life.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Like everywhere, always. I think the Capital Cities ones, if I remember correctly, they released that originally in like 2012 and then it hit years later.
Huh.
I think it was like 14 or 15. It was like, that's the year of that song. So that's also interesting because if you start thinking about, I feel like more than any other time in history, because information, i.e. music, media, whatever, is so accessible always, it never stops. It's always available. Any song can have a second, third, fourth life. Not that they're all going to have that kind of life, but
yeah,
which is also interesting. I feel like you could have had that back in the day. You know, you could release a song, but it would have been on a hard disc.
Yeah.
And, which I do miss that a little bit of like the tangible good part of it. You know, you still get that obviously with like CDs and vinyl, but because they're no longer the only way to listen to music, it's just like, it's a novelty more than anything. But, I wonder back then, like NSYNC, you know, obviously they were massive, so it didn't really matter, but had they been our size and released, you know, It's Gonna Be Me, and it just for whatever reason didn't go through the right channels and the right people hear it and this, that, and the other, could that song still have had a shot 2 years later the same way that Capital Cities had their shot too? You know,
yeah.
I'm just like, I don't know, because did someone have to have the physical CD like in their closet and go like, oh, I don't remember this one.
You know,
it's like archived versus now you can listen to anything anywhere, anytime. So,
it seems like it was so like, either radio focused or some sort of cycle focused, like the album thing.
Yeah.
Where now it could be whenever and something happens, whether it's TikTok or YouTube or, you know, whatever. There's so many different avenues you can kind of build on. Yeah, I mean, that's really exciting that it seems like there's more opportunity for life with music being made.
Theoretically,
yeah.
My only fear with the the vastness of it is, you know, it seems as though if Joan would have been a band in 85, 76, like just another era.
Yeah.
I feel like I could be totally wrong. I feel like the market share was a lot smaller in terms of, there were still a lot of popular bands, but that number was a lot smaller seemingly than it is now, to where I think there's still like the big players. Maybe that number's still the, you know, the Halseys and the Weeknds and the Taylor Swift, like those numbers maybe are still the same as, you know, back in the 80s with whoever, Michael Jackson and Prince and Huey Lewis, you know, more household names or whatever. Maybe that's the same ratio of names. But what was the chance of a Joan in 1986 getting to even where we are now in 23? Like, would the same opportunities be afforded to us through the same systems of, like, releasing music, because it wasn't to the internet. It was through a record label and making physical. I mean, I'm sure you still had people making their own music and like passing it out, but it still needed to be heard by someone, some sort of gatekeeper, not to use that term negatively, but just like someone who literally holds the keys to that person's career. I don't know. It's interesting to think about like such a different time and a different medium for music. I'm just curious what we would have seen then.
Yeah.
May would have been harder because the threshold of like perfection was maybe higher.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, we can't just be making like, okay, bedroom pop.
Yeah.
Part of the allure of it is it's pop music, but made in a bedroom. So like maybe studio quality isn't like a thing. Like it doesn't matter. Like I'm writing pop songs, but it's me and an acoustic and a crappy drum machine. But that's like that's what makes it cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Could you do that back then when Thriller was released?
Yeah,
like, totally. Because you're like fighting against like, this is like a expensive studio and Quincy Jones is behind it and like all these things. Huh.
There was such a hurdle right off the bat to make a really good sounding record, where that's not a thing anymore. Like, you can make a really good sounding record with stock everything on a MacBook, you know, that you get for school if you want, you know. It's like,
or I think about like when I hear demos that like pop up on YouTube of like a Prince demo or something, granted they sound cool because it's Prince, but quality isn't always like it's him and a Lindrum and like singing crazy high and like one guitar, one bass, and he's obviously a virtuous, so it sounds good, but like it's obviously a demo.
Yeah,
they would have never released that as the pro mixed mastered product. Now though, I even think back, this is pre like internet as we know it now, like Elliott Smith, acoustic folk singer, his stuff sounded really cool and analog, but like super wide doubled vocals that weren't really tuned.
Yeah.
He's just singing these like pretty somber acoustic songs, but kind of the like lo-fi nature of it is what made it.
Yeah.
Like, did they have that lo-fi thing in the 80s? You know, like, what was that then? Kind of is it? So now I even think about that, like, production value, though we have the highest ever because technology has like advanced so much. You can also, Taylor Swift could legitimately, and I believe this, could legitimately sing on a voice memo on her iPhone.
Yeah.
Of just her and an acoustic close to the mic and put it on Spotify tomorrow and it would get millions of streams.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it would be on the radio, but
yeah,
just even that, it's like, that's just a different perspective. Like, that just didn't exist then, you know, to my knowledge. That,
no, I mean,
it wasn't popularized.
It was way more like, exactly. Like, if there was that, it was like underground records that were being made, or like it was kind of its own scene that a lot of people probably didn't ever hear in their life.
Yeah. But now you can just upload it.
Yeah.
It might not get heard, but I legit could talk on a voice. I could read a slam poem on a voice memo and literally put it on Spotify today.
Yeah.
Or whatever their turnaround
time. It's crazy too, because like earlier you said our size, and I was thinking about that. Like, I was just like, I don't even know if there was, in those days, whenever it was more maybe the normal like way of being discovered and then you're put on a label and like developed or whatever. Like, the fact that we can be like our size is just crazy because it's like, I don't, like, to me, we're just starting. And right. like to other people that we talk to, it's like, we've been doing it for a long time. They look up to us and they like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's weird to think about even that. Like, it feels like it was maybe more, like of a bigger step ladder thing, like how it used to be in the industry where it was like, okay, now you're signed and now you're at this level.
Right.
Where it's, and maybe this is a metrics thing, but I think it's more because of just like Spotify and accessibility is like, you can just like keep at it and keep chipping away at it and just continue to grow where maybe you wouldn't have that chance to take, you know, 3 years to gradually grow, you know, in 20 years ago or something or whatever. Like that's cool for me to think about too, where it feels like the accessibility to make a full-time living or like have different avenues of kind of being able to do music is much more accessible than it used to be, which is really cool. But
yeah, it's not, it doesn't seem as though it's like you're nothing or you're famous anymore.
Right. Yeah.
There's, you can be, which is why I think, excuse me. I think the way you and I view it and tend to talk about it, more blue collar mentality. Mm-hmm. Part of that's where we're from. Part of that's how we grew up, you know, that, but you know, perhaps had we lived in LA, maybe that'd be different just cause we're surrounded by industry. Maybe not. Maybe we still have the same mentality, but, I like the thought of like, it feels like, we're entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
We're not pitching an idea on Shark Tank, but we're like, we have that idea and it is Joan. And we're just like, you know, the investors are our fans, you know, and we're like, we're just like, you and I are like making our product, which is our music, day in and day out, grinding and going like, man, be sick if in 2 years we were at these we hit these kind of milestones. And, it feels less like, oh man, I hope we wake up tomorrow and we're a household name.
Sure.
Which everyone has even an iota of that dream in terms of at least in this industry of like, you want your music to be heard and you want to have that arena moment and all those things. But it does seem with the accessibility these days and how things have shifted, artists our size, like you said, kind of that idea or even possible is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
And there can be like thousands of us. It's not just like 100 really famous people, or you tried and you went to Nashville and you did that showcase at that country bar and then it didn't happen. So you're back home working at the plant, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty cool. And I mean that, I think the same thing bleeds into podcasts, you know, podcast people, influencers, like whatever that world is, new media, like, a lot of people, if you have like something just interesting to say or to present, if you have a camera,
you can
if you find the right audience, you know, it doesn't mean a million people are going to watch you, but 10,000 could, you know, whatever. It's nuts.
Maybe 5 or 6.
Yeah. I think that's about how many are probably listening to this right now. We at least have one. Jake's here.
Hey, yeah. Jake. We kind of make him though.
That's true.
We bring him along and we say, we need you to watch this. Live.
Oh my gosh. Well, I was going to say we could transition into, I had an artist I wanted to talk about.
Sure.
If we That's want great. To. We talked about maybe this structure being, talking about general things that we're interested in right now, and then maybe bring in a producer and artist that we're interested in on the back half. One artist that I cannot get enough of, and I first discovered her actually on TikTok. I think it was like doing like my normal, you know, scrolling and just mindless, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it stopped and it was her and her acoustic, like, I feel like she was like on a bed or something. And I was immediately captivated by her voice, Lizzie McAlpine. She was singing Pancakes for Dinner, I think was the song. And it's one of the first times, like I don't get, back to the attention economy thing, like there's so many times a day that you hear new songs and new artists and just news and all this stuff coming at us 24/7 that like it, even New Music Friday, I like to Fridays, you and I kind of both go down the list and just top to bottom. even that, I find myself like, if in the first 10 seconds I'm not captured, I'm like, skip.
Yeah.
It's nothing against the artist. I'm just like, if it's something that I don't usually listen to and it fits that mold, I'm like, okay, I'm not into this. So I skip.
Yeah.
She was one of the first artists in a long time for me that like, the minute I heard the tone of her voice, I was just like, stop. And and then I checked out like the next 15 videos she had put out or whatever. But
yeah.
And then she released, so I've been following her now for at least a year, maybe more than that, maybe a year and a half or so. But and then she did the Tiny Desk.
Yeah.
And I've never watched a live performance video this many times before. Yeah.
So good.
It is so good. I think what captures me most about her is number one, her voice. Like there's something about it that's like really special. Mm-hmm. It's like the pure can kind of be raspy, but also she's like crazy good range, crazy good control. Like yeah. She does these runs out of nowhere that I'm like, I did not. Mm-hmm. It's like a singer songwriter song and she'll do this little flicker with her voice. And I'm like, holy crap. But, and then the songwriting, it's just like super, unique kind of narrative style, which we love doing. Mm-hmm. But you like feel like you're there in her mind with her.
Yeah.
The song Ceilings that's been on repeat. And just from the literal first few lines, the ceilings plaster, like,
I'm
sitting there with her looking at the ceiling, feeling what she's feeling.
There's like so much texture in it where you can like, you can literally like place yourself.
Yeah.
Wherever she's saying she is, you can imagine. Yeah. And I think her voice is so cool to me because she almost doesn't, feel like, it almost feels like she's not even singing or something.
It's
like
very effortless. Yeah.
Yeah. It like feels, it feels like I could do it almost, but like I definitely can't. Like it feels accessible in a way where, it's like she's just like one of us or something, like just like can be anybody can do it, but obviously her talent level is like crazy high. But maybe it's just like she comes off so genuinely or humble or something, but like there's something about her that feels just like a friend kind of, and that you're rooting on. I don't know, it's so cool. But her I mean, even just concepts of her songs are just so good.
It's like a effortless, it's just very, it comes natural. Like you can tell, like when you watch her sing, it's just like she's got it. Mm-hmm. Like I'd be hard pressed to think. It's funny, like when we make a mistake and someone's like, oh, I didn't even notice, I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like if you weren't listening, her, I'm truly like, I don't know that her mistake, I'd be like, I couldn't even tell because it's just like so comes so easy, it seems. But and I'd say too, like the production, what's really impressed me is most everything I've heard from her, which I don't think I've heard every single song, but I've heard a good chunk of her discography, like super simple. Like Ceilings is acoustic, like finger strums, like no pick or anything, just her voice, rich harmonies with reverb, really soft drums, like acoustic drums. Bass, maybe there's some strings in there. That's like it.
Yeah.
And it feels so full. Everything is in its right place. Like it's kind of quiet in a good way. Like you're not like, you're kind of like makes you listen, but you're not, there's no moment, even at the loudest apex of the song, you're not like, oh God, like I got to turn my volume down or anything. Yeah. It's so, I don't know. It reminds me a little bit production wise of, do you ever hear Damien Rice back in the day? Yeah. You know, he was more of the like, I think he was, I feel like he was Irish. Forgive me if I'm wrong on that, but somewhere in that general vicinity of the world, I'm pretty sure it was Irish. But same kind of thing. Like it could just, his voice is so captivating and his songwriting and storytelling was that it could just be him and a guitar and you didn't need anything else. Like, and I think that that's a testament to the songwriting and the voice, but probably the songwriting, well, not more than anything. It's both. It's probably both and. But the song just being that good that it doesn't, literally doesn't need anything else.
Yeah.
At all.
And knowing it, like, I don't know. It's crazy how it's like, it feels like she's such a veteran kind of in the singer-songwriter world where, like...
But she's so young.
Yeah, she's so young, and, like, I think the natural... Maybe this is just how kind of, like, we've grown up, like, with music, but I think a lot of the times your natural inclination is to try to, like, put as much on it as possible, right, to try to fill it up, where... You know, with her, it almost feels like she goes the opposite way. And it's like so vulnerable to just be like, it's just going to be me and guitar. Yeah. And that's it. And like, you have to have like such a belief in the song.
Yeah.
And also like a confidence in it where it's, I don't know, it's just like that kind of exudes naturally in the production. It doesn't feel like anything extra is there. Yeah. Everything that's there is like super intentional.
Yeah.
Which, I mean... Like we even try to do that with pop stuff, but it's like even more where if it's just a guitar and voice and it's like, that's it, that's all you're listening to. It makes it so like powerful and that much more interesting. And it's like, you can't just do that and it not hit, you know, like, 'cause you can tell quick if it's not hitting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for her to be able to kind of navigate that so well and being so young and just like, I don't know, even if in private she's not confident, like her confidence in her singing and writing is like so evident in the music that's out there. It's like, I don't know. It's really special to listen to. It's cool.
When I'm seeing her name everywhere. So yeah, good for her, because much deserved. And I feel like maybe I'm wrong. Do you know, does she have like a music theater background to some degree?
I don't know.
I feel like I've seen her. She may just like singing select songs from that, but I feel like I've seen, I don't know if she has or hasn't been any like productions, but she has some affiliation with that world or something. And so I wonder if that has something to do with it too. Like,
yeah,
if she came up at all in that world, you know, a lot, like some of the best songwriting is in that world.
Yeah.
It doesn't always make it to the mainstream, but, cause you have, you know, Hamilton's like so specific about a specific period of time, you know, it's like,
especially the narrative thing, like,
right,
there's such a cool skill there to say a narrative in a song, you know, 100%. Like, and melodically and everything, there's its own thing there too, but yeah, I mean, it feels like that's one of the strongest places that can like put together a narrative that's within, you know, the structure of a song, and you can like know exactly what's going on and really feel it too. And like kind of,
yeah,
I don't know, get so close to the emotion or like be able to see what's going on clearly. I don't know. That's really a special like skill to be able to,
it is,
to have.
Killing it. She's not going to hear this, but if she does, big fan, buddy. Keep going. Big fan. So yeah, I've been absolutely obsessed with her. So.
Great. Yeah. She's awesome.
So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, that feels like a good, maybe a place to stop.
Yep.
We're huge fans of you, Lizzie.
Yep.
I'm a huge fan of you, Alan.
Oh, that's sweet. You're cool. You're a good guy. Real good guy.
Thank you.
Anyway, we're having open calls for the second member of Joan soon. So I'm just kidding. Yeah, don't forget Super Glue Tour. I think we start May 13th
in Atlanta.
And we end June 16th.
Very good.
In Little Rock, Arkansas. And a lot of places in between, baby.
Yep.
Come see us. Album out April 19th.
Nice.
One day I said 25th online and I was wrong, and you told me I had to delete it.
Yeah.
All good. Just corrected it for the record. Anyway, love you guys so much.
Love you. Thanks for listening.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye.